What I've been struggling with this week, and I've had difficulty coming to an analysis of, and therefore how to express it, is the approach or way into our ability to see our new world based on love, based in love, the solution to Socrates' dilemma embodied by Jesus and all the prophets in defiance of class, which we discussed last week as a perfect foil to Proudhon's. The approach expressed in Jesus' words addressing those who bow to the authority of men instead of seeking the light of truth. O faithless generation, you are like children piping in the marketplace, crying to be seen and loved. Unless you see miracles, you will not believe that love, positive as sound, exists, is. The demonstration of miracles, which is the power of love, transcendent nature, George Eliot calls it. Isn't it? Isn't this the approach of Prince? And aren't they right? Is their analysis not correct? Are we not the faithless generation? Because we have been cultivated, conditioned to be so? To ignore what our bodies say and turn to the system for our orders? And as in the last analysis, God is love, is truth, is the infinite, is the unknowable, is the mystery. Is this mystery not also Proudhon's science of society? Because it is the science of truth, of love. Because it is our guidance in establishing society. But I'm avoiding it yet. The question of whether what we call miracles expedite the process of believing in ourselves, in the authority of truth, in the authority of love, in the demonstrated truth that is its bloom. This is what I was avoiding. As to why, that can come later. I avoided feeling deeply about the fact that they are right. Jesus, Emily, Prince. Love is not a concept, but a living presence in us that is positive as sound, pulling our coats, nagging our thoughts, reminding us of who and what we are. But we've been taught that what is invisible doesn't exist. One of the reasons we have such difficulty believing that there are global statesmen who hide hidden power and that they secretly, hidden from sight and so invisible, possess a secretly stolen, invisible weapon called EMF. We can now understand why love is such a threat. It allows no master but itself, as Proudhon says. And in owning truth perceives falsity. And therefore, why those who know this and manifest it become targets of the Plato's tribesmen, who try to undermine them with propaganda relentlessly seeded to erode our belief in them, which is our belief in love, essentially. We can now understand why the power guys paste over their faces accusations of grandiosity, self-important, and Karl Popper, recall, explained to us the root of this criticism in Plato and his, to quote Goering, "I am nothing, the state is all" maxim. For obvious reasons, we are not supposed to have high opinions of ourselves, not supposed to authentically, as opposed to our preoccupation with air, mere words, love ourselves. We can now understand why the power guys try to undermine our belief in our reincorporations of Thoth, those who come to return thought, return our love of ourselves to us, by attempting to cover their true faces with false accusations of arrogance. This was done to Proudhon, to Nicola to Prince. And then these Plato's tribesmen attempt to narrow the audience for our thoughts by shrinking in our eyes the scope of their relevance while imposing absolute silence about their full legacy in the media. Our only means for getting information and communicating it, for broadly seeing what each and all are doing. Love can only live in us when paired with the unfettered development of our thought. Love is the unfettered development of our thought, i.e., with self-creation. Love can only be a living presence in us, one we are aware of when we own ourselves, which means owning and being owned by naught but love. This is the strategic significance of solving, by which I mean developing an array of remedial measures for intervening in and ending the self-abnegating patterns of the cycle of class. Of solving Socrates' dilemma.